Marcus Mariota agreeing to a one-year, $5 million deal with the Eagles, who we thought might trade for him back in, I think you said it was 2015. I keep forgetting exactly. It was 2015, if I'm not mistaken. Well, Mariota finally an Eagle, this time under Nick Sirianni, not Chip Kelly.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports. From that first ball game with your folks, to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph, to maybe even taking your own kids to their very first game. It's the feeling we all get that kind of brings us back to our own personal Philly field of dreams. And the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel. Our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all right here in the Philadelphia area. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so check us out. The night terrors, as we always like to say, only last a few days. Museum of Sports show is brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me, as always, every week from his sports cave in Greater Villanova, he is our guide and mentor, Comcast Spectacore legend, founding vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers and creator of the Museum of Sports. And he's the author of the recent book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Philadelphia's greatest showman, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. Hi, Lou.
Wow, that was the best introduction I've ever had. I've been called worse, but...
And I haven't been drinking. That's the good part.
I just want to say off the top that before the Phillies played their first game, I looked at the schedule, three at the Rangers and three at the Yankees before they get home. 1-5, I said. I swear, 1-5. And I'm sorry it came true, but it was true. And hopefully they'll pick up against some Miami and the Reds at the homestand. If the Phillies decide to play tomorrow, they canceled the game today and it's gorgeous out there. So not up to a great start.
Yes, but you predicted it, and I remember that.
Thank you.
Our lovely Museum of Sports show, Director of Community Outreach, the lovely Susan Baxter, is off today, and I know that she's the only reason Merrill Reese ever shows up on this show, because of the lovely Susan Baxter. Well, coming up today, he's a former Sixers and 49ers executive, kind of known as the franchise fixer, and he's got a new book out. Andy Dolich is back here on the Museum of Sports show. And what is it like to follow 75 years of Philly sports, the good, the bad, the heartbreak? An exclusive from Lou Scheinfeld, his own perspective. And you can see what it's done to him just by looking at your Facebook screens there. But up first, he really is play-by-play royalty, and he's been the soundtrack of the Philadelphia Eagles for nearly half a century. And he's really one of the last practitioners from the old school who is kind of keeping radio sportscasts alive and extremely relevant and wildly exciting. He has been a good friend of the Museum of Sports show all the way back to our inception in 2019. A huge welcome back to Mr. Merrill Reese. Hiya, Merrill.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. You, the off season always treats you well. It seems like you lose about 10 or 15 years as soon as the season and the Super Bowl is done.
Yeah, well, I gained 10 or 15 years in the last 3 minutes of that game.
So I guess, why don't we get started with the news that you heard off the top there about the signing of Marcus Mariota as a backup coming to Philadelphia, you know, to play behind Jalen Hurts. And the last time, you know, Mariota and Eagles were mentioned in the same breath was when your favorite coach, Chip Kelly, haunted the sidelines. So any thoughts on Mariota, who's been both a starter multiple times and been a backup as well? You keep hearing this. If you're going to get a backup, you need to have a clone of your starter kind of thing. I don't know how true that is.
Well, I think there's a certain amount of truth to that. When you want to get a backup for Jalen Hurts, who was one of the great running quarterbacks in the National Football League, you've got to get somebody who can move from point A to point B. And Marcus Mariota is a very athletic quarterback. He can move. The reservation is the thought that Buddy Ryan used to tell me, durability is as important as ability, and he hasn't stayed healthy throughout his career. Now, I'm not saying that's not just a chance thing, that he's been unfortunate, but you go by the past performance. He's a very talented quarterback, a very bright quarterback. I know why Chip was enamored with him. Of course, he played for Chip at Oregon, But he was the best college quarterback in the country. I don't know if he was worth what Chip was trying to pay about eight players to get him. Fortunately, that never occurred, but including Fletcher Cox at that point.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, I think he can be a very solid backup if he has to come in and fill in for Jalen Hurts for a game or two.
Yeah, I'm thinking if that had happened back in 2015, if that was the right year, I don't know if that would have been the wrong player at the wrong time with the wrong team under the wrong coach.
Yeah, I don't know that either.
Merrill, the last time we had you on was preseason last year. I think it might have been after or during training camp. And the Eagles were looking pretty strong, and you were very bullish on them getting to the Super Bowl. What are you feeling this year, or is it too early?
It's much too early, Lou, for the reason that people say, what do you think of what the Eagles have done so far in free agency? Well, you know, they've picked up a few guys, but who knows? I mean, think about the fact that last year the Eagles didn't pick up some of the key pieces. First of all, draft night, not through the draft, but through a trade the night of the draft, got them to trade for A.J. Brown, who turned out to be the single biggest acquisition last year. I mean, he was spectacular. And then two very big defensive pieces, James Bradbury and C.J. Gardner-Johnson, were picked up right before the beginning of the season. These were key additions. So right now, if I were to grade them, it would be an I for incomplete. We don't even know what the draft is going to bring them yet. So it's tough to say. However, there's the nervousness that the Super Bowl runner-up doesn't always go back the next year. And that's the statistics there are not encouraging. But look, each season is different. Each team is different. This is, Lou, this is an excellent organization. From Jeffrey on down, that's an excellent organization. Jeffrey's excellent. Howie Roseman has done a great job with this team. He knows the lay of the land. He's a good deal maker. And I'm optimistic. Again, I believe in the organization, and I think they have the best young quarterback in the entire NFC.
You know, we got a year, you mentioned we got a year out of Gardner Johnson. He was lost to free agency. I think Marcus Epps, TJ Edwards, Kaiser White. Are any of those worrisome gaps that we either have yet to fill or haven't filled with something comparable?
There are a couple that I will miss. I think TJ Edwards is a very good player coming off of a very good season, but there's economics involved.
Yeah.
It's you know, I hear people talking about, well, you can't sign this one because of the cap, and what you have to do with the cap is you have to extend things. It's far too complicated for me. Mm. I still can't understand. I'd have to have a whole course of Wharton School to figure out how to play around with the cap. I kid my spotter, Billy Werndell, all the time. I said, how do you know all this? Well, he kind of makes it up. I don't understand any of this stuff. It's very, very complex, but I can tell you Howie and his group, they understand it very, very well. And you just don't have enough. You have to figure out what you're going to do to make it all fit. And a big piece of this is going to be the signing and the extension of Jalen Hurts. He deserves it. He's going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 million. But it's how they spread it out. You're shaking your head. Listen, it was okay for you to make $50 million. You never complained about that, Lou. The players gave you the big money.
Ed Snyder wasted $50 million on a goalie who turned out to be a kook and was gone in 2 years. So you're right. And that was 10, 12, 15 years ago. So, but anyway, what do you think with the number 10 spot in the draft? What should the Eagles be looking for?
Well, I can tell you that, again, bringing up Howie Roseman's name, it has been his history to go for a lineman, whether it's offensive or defensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot more fun for us to say Bijan Robinson, great running back, University of Texas.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see him carry the ball. But running backs, you know, are devalued in the game today, and they're not going to do that. They're going to probably pick up an offensive lineman. And here's the good thing about this. I have fans and friends, mostly friends, who say to me, they have it all figured out. They should move back to about 18 and then get another two draft picks, and they come into all of this. I say use the 10th pick. And the reason I say that is because the first three or four players, there are going to be three or four quarterbacks drafted in this first round before you get to the Eagles. I mean, there's no doubt that C.J. Stroud's going to go. Bryce Young is going to go. Mm-hmm. Possibly Will Levis from Kentucky is going to go. And Anthony Richardson is going to go. And I'm not sure they should all go, the first two for sure. But there will be three or four gone. So let's say, for example, that there are four gone. And the Eagles are drafting at 10. That means that of all the great players in this country involved in the draft, they're going to get one of the top three or four non-quarterbacks in the draft. Don't mess around. Get your eye, fall in love with somebody and take them. And I don't care. Again, I don't think it's going to be a running back, but there are some very good edge rushers. There are good interior defensive linemen. There are some spectacular offensive linemen who are really good. Get them. Lane Johnson's going to be gone in another year. Brandon Graham's going to be gone in another year. I mean, Lane Johnson says 2 years, so we'll see. But chances are this will do it for 35-year-old Brandon Graham. Mm-hmm. Jason Kelce, they're already in position to move over.
Merrill, I think you may
have to play a guard this year. But draft somebody that's going to not necessarily be glamorous and exciting 1 year, but who's going to build that offensive and defensive line, because that's where this game is won. That game is won in the trenches. I know that's a cliche, but it really is. One of the reasons, and Jalen Hurts will tell you that one of the reasons he's so successful is because he is behind one of the best offensive lines in the National Football League. Now, he's gifted.
Without a doubt.
He's great player. But there are a lot of great players who go down very, very early and never bounce back because they're standing behind seven blocks of paper mache.
Yeah. And the secondary more or less stayed intact, did it not? I know there was talk early on about releasing Darius Slay, but I guess they did work out some kind of extension.
They did. And Bradbury is very, very good. Yeah. They lost the safety, of course, and that's never good. And I think Epps is a very, very good player. I really do. And Johnson was terrific last year, Gardner Johnson. However, they have a young safety who came in, an undrafted free agent by the name of Reed Blankenship, and he played very well.
He was spectacular.
There are some safeties in this draft, maybe further back than the first couple of rounds, who are very, very good. There's a corner. There are three corners out there who are considered top draft choices. And again, you're talking about corners right now in Slay and in Bradbury who are over 30 years old. So you've got to address this at one point. The guy I like is Joey Porter Jr. from Penn State. I think he's terrific. His dad was a great player with the Steelers. So there are things they can do.
Merrill, you've been around long enough to have seen the good, the bad, the ugly at the Eagles, but you sound so enthused now. How much better is it to be able to broadcast when the team is good?
You know what? It is better. You know what? You get the better the script, Lou, the better the broadcast. You get some great scripts. You know, the better the script, the better the movie. So there are more exciting moments. I mean, it's a ball to be able to describe what Jalen Hurts is doing. It's an amazing feeling to watch Devontae Smith make one of these twisting, turning, tap your toe near the sideline catches. These are great players.
When you sort of grade your half century of Eagledom, where are you? Are we looking at like the good old days, the halcyon days here? I mean, just on your tenure, Merrill, or were there flashes in the past? Obviously, the 17-18 season, but in terms of just sort of duration, are we looking from 2017 to present? Is sort of the best and the brightest that you've seen?
You know, Doug, this may surprise you, but I think this past year's team was the most complete Eagles team I've been around in 46 seasons. This will be 47. But this is the best, the most complete. People would say, well, what's their weakness? And I would say they don't have one. they did not have a weakness. Now, there were some things that bit them late. Aaron Sippus, the punter, was injured late in the season, and the first game he played in 6 or 7 weeks was the Super Bowl, and he hit a flat 38-yarder that resulted in a 65-yard return that was very injurious. But the fact of the matter is, this team did not have a weakness. They had the best offensive line. They had the best trio of receivers in Eagles history. Best trio. And I say that, and I've said that in front of my dear friend and partner in the booth, Mike Wick, who played with Harold Carmichael. But the year they played together was 82, when Mike caught 10 balls and Harold was 1 year away from the end of his career. But to have Devontae Smith, to have A.J. Brown, and then to have Dallas Goedert, who is a playmaker, that's a trio the likes of which they've never had. That's the best I've been around.
Yeah, it's just tough, though. You know, dynastic football, when the league, you know, pushed to go to parity, you know, whenever that was 30 years ago, it's just tough to come up with, you know, the right formula. We've had the right formula in a few different incarnations, you know, going back to Dick Vermeil and then Andy Reid and then Doug Peterson. And but, you know, it's always like Lou was until he got his new replacement tooth. There's just kind of loose dentures in there. It never all comes together at one time for an extended period of time with multiple Super Bowls.
But you're talking about really bright coaches. You're talking about, you know, three of the best the Eagles have had. Well, maybe four. And we'll find out about this fourth one as we go on, because Nick Sirianni is really a good coach, has a great culture going down there, evaluates the players well, is authoritative and well-liked at the same time. And, you know, my favorite coach of all time is Dick Vermeil. To me, when you look in the dictionary and look under the C's and find the word charisma, there's a picture of Dick Vermeil. Andy Reid was a tremendous coach, winningest coach in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles. All Doug did was come in here and win a Super Bowl. Very, very, very good coach. And as I said, Nick is an ascending star in the coaching world.
Well, Sirianni is a man of the people. He appears in bars. He's taking shots. He's shopping. He stops and says hello to people. He goes to them. And that's really refreshing, because as great a coach as Andy Reid was, he was a little bit standoffish, and he didn't like his press conferences. He didn't come across as warm and fuzzy. But aside from the X's and O's, I think Sirianni's a fresh breath of air in Philadelphia.
Well, he is. Doug was like that too, Lou. Doug was just a regular guy. I mean, he's the guy who you'd like as your next door neighbor. Nick, you'd like Nick as your next door neighbor, except he'd be up too early and running around and making too much noise. he'd wake you up too often.
Okay. Hey, Merrill, we got a few minutes left. I wanted to ask you, because I ask you this every time, and you usually have a couple of things that you've added. Have you added anything to the Merrill Reese sports memorabilia collection? Did you get in? Did you manage to escape with anything from the Super Bowl?
No. I did a very good memory for me. My friend Rich Lerner called me from the Golf Channel, and they picked us up and limited us over to the TPC, TPC course in Arizona, and we had a great. And then they met us with a golf cart, and my wife and son were with me, and they took us out to the 16th hole, which is the loudest hole in golf. And I worked on the set and was on the Golf Channel for quite a bit of time with Rich Lerner. I had a ball with that. I absolutely loved that. So I had that, and then this morning. This morning, funny you asked, I received a note from the office of the Eagles informing me to please come down next Wednesday so that they can get my ring size for the NFC Championship.
Nice.
So that's always nice.
So do those stay in a safe deposit box, or where are those kept? Or you cannot say here on live broadcast.
Well, I don't have to give their hiding places, but the other three, you know, I didn't receive the first one for 23 years. I did not get the one from 1980. I always kind of felt bad that Smokey the Guarded Widener got one, and that Don Rickles got one, and Frank Sinatra got one. And I thought,
well, were you ever given an explanation?
Well, I had only been doing the games a couple of years. Yeah. So they had somebody to give out. And Leonard, who I loved, had his own celebrity guests and list. But 23 years later, I got a phone call from Jim Murray, and who had been the general manager, wonderful person. And he said, I want you to do something for me. I said, what? He said, meet me down in your broadcast booth at Veterans Stadium this afternoon at 4 o'clock. I don't care what your plans are, break them. Meet me down there. And I walked into the broadcast booth, and the farthest thing from my mind, what was about to happen. And Jim said, sit down here. And he made a little tribute and handed me a box. And I opened it up, and it was my NFC championship ring for 1980. Well, so that was number one. Then I waited again, and I got one in 2004 when they won the NFC championship. I can tell you that that ring went as a present to my son, Nolan, who's out in California as a film editor.
Oh, wow.
The night that I received the Super Bowl ring that summer from the Super Bowl 52. This will be the fourth.
Oh, yeah. I think even Lou got an NFC championship ring from 1980. Didn't you, Lou?
No, I did not. we went to the finals. The Phillies went to the finals. The Eagles went to the finals. The Sixers. Everybody. And I didn't get anything.
Well, you deserve one.
Thank
you. Because you were a great part of that organization, and I was always happy to stop in your office and talk to you. And you knew what was going on. You're a wonderful sports executive.
Well, thank you. And I want to congratulate you on using the word enamored properly. Nobody uses that word. They all say he was enamored with. It's enamored of. And thank you, Merrill, for elocution.
if not grammatical, I don't know what I am.
Well, Eagles play-by-play legend and wonderful man, and the guy who's got more Super Bowl rings than anybody I know. Mr. Merrill Reese, thank you, as always, for gracing us here on the Museum of Sports Show.
It's my pleasure, Doug and Lou. It's always good to speak with you guys. Have a great day. And when you need me, all Susan has to do is give me 12 or 13 dates and I'll pick out one.
Merrill, thank you so much, man.
Take care, man.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible contribution today so you can be part of Philly's Sport Shrine. When we come back, assuming he pops up into our Facebook box there, former Sixers executive and franchise fixer, Mr. Andy Dolich, and his new book, When the Museum of Sports Show Continues, right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a few minutes.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Perrant, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how
Ed
Snyder rescued the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked.
1 minute.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomics Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatchi, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
you miss a recent Museum of Sports show? No worries. You can see or listen to any of our previous shows on the Museum of Sports website or on our Facebook page. You'll love our lineup of great guests, including Merrill Reese, the Eagles' Vi Sekahema, Bill Berge and Kevin
Riley. You want me to send them the link again?
Flyers broadcasters Jim Jackson and Steve Coates, and the Phillies' always colorful Larry Boa. The Museum of Sports is on the air and Facebook, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 60 and Facebook Live.
Breaking news out of Phoenix, Arizona. NFL owners have approved the deal to move the Oakland Raiders to Las Vegas.
All right. Thank you. All righty.
We're back on the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and the Museum of Sports Facebook Live page is brought to you by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Susan Baxter off early for the Easter weekend. Our next guest, we are told he is signing into Facebook Live. He, and you've known him for years, Lou. He got his start with the Philadelphia 76ers as just a kid, I guess, when Lou would, you know, tromp around the halls there and would demand that people couldn't look you directly in the eye and they had to address you by your grace, I think. And
King, I preferred King.
And he went on to be a vaunted sports executive and got sort of a reputation as a franchise fixer, you know, with stints in the NFL, the NBA, National Hockey League, Major League Baseball. And now he has got a new book out about Oakland, California, and its fight to be taken seriously as a sports town. And the name of the book, I want to say, I've got it up here. Stand by 1 second. I think it is Goodbye, Oakland, Winning Wanderlust and a Sports Town's Fight for Survival. And, of course, we all know the story of the Oakland Raiders going to Los Angeles and then back to Oakland and now to Las Vegas for however long that deal lasts. And that's got to be brutal. The
Warriors left, too.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's home of championships and Super Bowls and that sort of thing. And for some reason, they just don't have the, I don't know what it is, if it's just a political unwillingness to spend the money.
It's a dump. It's a city.
I've never been there. I've been to San Francisco a million times. I've never been to Oakland.
I've been there several times. I was there for the opening game when the Oakland California Golden Seals came into the league the same year that the Flyers did in 1967, and Ed Snyder and I flew out for that game, the opening game, when we lost 4-1 or 5-1, and beautiful new arena where the Warriors played for many years, but everybody has fled from Oakland.
Yeah, like I said, never having been there, and you just assume that everything in California is wonderful and just marvelous and you know, perfect all the time. But, you know, I don't care for the Raiders because the Vikings, one of their four Super Bowl losses was to John Madden and the Raiders in another lopsided affair. In fact, I meant to ask Merrill when he was here if, what he thought the Vikings prospects were, because every time he's here, he usually says, can I please throw that helmet out?
Right.
And then I start weeping uncontrollably, and then it's all hell breaks loose. Speaking of weeping uncontrollably, Andy, we were worried sick. We didn't know where you were. You didn't write.
You know, it's only been 43 years since I moved to the West Coast, and I'm going to get these time changes right one of these days. I apologize, woman. I totally apologize.
Yeah, no, you're okay. We were just saying you got your start with the 76ers as a wide-eyed young kid who every time you passed Lou in the hallway, you were told never to look him directly into the eye and only address him as your grace.
And exactly. I could never look to the left as I was walking through the innards of the spectrum. Correct.
Only green M&Ms. Only green M&Ms in the green room. But you went on to a wonderful career as a sports executive and a franchise fixer, as we mentioned, with the NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB. And you got the new book out. We were just kind of talking about the title here, Goodbye, Oakland, Winning Wanderlust and a Sports Town's Fight for Survival.
Oh,
ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Andy Dolich back here on the Museum of Sports Show. How you doing, Andy?
Doing great. Always great to be back in Philadelphia and its environs. One of my most favorite places in the world. And is the Melrose Diner still around?
It is, but it's closed right now. They had a fire, and they're going to reopen. But the owner also owns the Broad Street Diner further up towards Center City, and he's trying to redevelop that into a apartment house and the diner on the floor.
But
he's been a little distracted. But as soon as it reopens, I'm gone.
Okay. Well, the Melrose, and I think he was talking about a major expansion.
Everybody I know goes to the Melrose.
Yeah. So, Andy, I got to ask you, you know, with you had got your, start here in Philadelphia with the Sixers and with all the sports angst in Philly that Lou's going to be talking about in the next segment. How did Oakland become your focus? How did you just feel more sorry for them than you felt for Philadelphia? How did that happen?
No. So my geography was pretty simple. 76ers, then the famous Maryland Arrows box lacrosse team. Then, as Lou knows, the Washington Capitals hockey team, owned by the late, great Abe Pollin, try to sell hockey when it's 98 degrees in Washington, D.C. in the summer, not a hockey city, and you're not good, and people don't know who you are.
Yeah.
And the only bullies were in the Senate and the Congress at that time, not at the Cap Center. Then I went to the Washington Diplomats, one of the great short names in sports, the Dips. You don't really like the Dips. In the old North American Soccer League, we played at RFK Stadium, did quite well, about 25,000. But that was the golden age of Pele, Beckenbauer, Giorgio Chinaglia, 65,000 people at the Meadowlands. And it was the precursor to the great expansion that we've seen in MLS and NWSL today. And then the answer to your question, Doug, I was recruited by the Haas family, who bought the Oakland A's from Charlie Finley. And you remember the A's? At one point, they were in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So Philadelphia, Kansas City, Charlie Finley said, enough with Kansas City, I'm going to Oakland. They had built a magnificent new facility, the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum, both with a stadium and an arena. And I said, sure, moved there in 1980, spent 14 incredible years with the Haas family. You know, and I don't just say this because Lou is on the call, but you know, you look at people like Ed Snyder and what they've done for sports, and so many other people, and Lou himself, and so many other people who have their names, you know, in halls of fame and all that. But the Haas family really cared about the community. And so 14 years there, then a year with the Golden State Warriors. And even though I moved around the country after that, I kept a home in the Bay Area, in the East Bay. And I loved Oakland. And, you know, you look at Philly and you look at Oakland and people go, you know, they're gritty cities. They're tough cities. Yeah, that's what makes them cool. You know, they don't try to be something that they're not. And so when you look at the Oakland Raiders, who are now the Las Vegas somethings, the Golden State Warriors, who never took the name Oakland, but they took the name Golden State, they ferry across the bay to a new $1.8 billion wonderful arena, Chase Center. And now the A's are, quote, playing a parallel path between trying to build a new urban ballpark city in a place called Howard Terminal, the Port of Oakland, and Las Vegas. So being an Oaklander, being part of that community, having, you know, the DNA of the community, just like you guys have, I went to Dave Newhouse, who was the 30-plus year sports columnist of the Oakland Trib when there was an Oakland Trib. Remember newspapers, Lou and Doug? Remember them?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Sad.
Yeah.
It's a novel idea.
Great columnists. And Philly, holy mackerel, there's a Hall of Fame of incredible writers. Not all your friends, but those guys and gals could write. So anyway, I went to Newhouse and I said, nobody's told this story of great franchises that have won, I think, 11 championships in three sports, multiple Hall of Famers, incredible, unique characters. And why don't you talk about owners, Al Davis, Charles Finley, and Franklin Muley. Mm. And that, so when we started pitching the book, and the good news, guys, this is not a self-published book. We all have many friends that are doing what, Lou? I'm writing a book, Lou.
Everybody's great. Writing a book or has a podcast.
Great. Who is your agent? And they go, I don't have one. Who's your publisher? blah, blah, blah. How much are you paying to have your book published? And I go like, no, we'll try to work it the other way. Final point, long answer to a short question, Doug, which is what pros are supposed to do, right? Short ones and get long ones. When we pitched the book, people said, it's Oakland. I'm not sure people are going to care about Oakland. And then we started saying, well, what about Seattle? They had a great basketball team. It's in Oklahoma City. What about the A's, Kansas City? What about Dallas that have lost teams? What about the Cleveland situation? What about Baltimore? And there's like 30 U.S. cities, including, remember the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants? I think I remember them. Mm-hmm. They ain't there. They ain't there anymore. So ultimately Triumph Publishing, which does a lot of sports titles, said, okay, fellas, go to it. And we went back to the teams coming to the Bay Area because of the new facility in the early 60s. And on Tuesday, Goodbye Oakland hopefully has a lot of people saying, hello, can I buy that book? And we're having our first book signing session in the Bay Area Tuesday night.
Right. That's fantastic. Congratulations. That is absolutely phenomenal. We were talking before you popped into the window there about what's wrong with Oakland. And you kind of said gritty and Philly's gritty. Lou just pretty much blurted out, it's a dump.
I didn't want him to hear that.
Yeah. But is it a political mindset? What is it that just lets the franchises go?
Yeah.
Is it just the lack of money? Uh-huh. They don't have the tax. I don't know. What's the problem?
Yeah. So complicated questions usually have simple answers. And especially if you look at sports and if you look at great sports cities, they require three peer pieces of their community: teamwork, leadership, and trust. Teamwork, leadership, and trust. And that doesn't just mean the team itself and its owners. That means the mayor, the city council, the leading businesses, fan groups. What are you doing philanthropically to the community? How serious are those people about sports? What kind of youth organizations do you have that are going to grow into season ticket holders who can spend real money? And so Oakland for a while had all of those, and now they have none of them. They have a very weak political system. And as you see what's happening in sports today, and let's just take the Raiders, the NFL teams up with Nevada and says, hey, Mark Davis, you're not a Nobel Prize winner, somewhat of an understatement. Why don't you come here? Here's $1 billion, not made up. And we'll help build you Allegiant Stadium, which is a great stadium. Oakland doesn't have that money. California, most of the facilities that are built there are privately financed. And I don't know if you've been to SoFi Stadium, the ultimate Taj Mahal, $5.5 billion. Mm-hmm. Well, that's money that comes from the private sector. So simple question, Doug: teamwork, leadership, and trust amongst the owners, the league / commissioners, and the business community has led to the Raiders leaving, the Warriors moving across the Bay, and it's still not Oakland, and the A's now literally in what I call the Bermuda Triangle cruise on the SS Groundhog Day, trying to figure out whether they're going to stay in Oakland or go to Vegas.
And, it's sort of sad to see, and Philly kind of had that reputation for a while there of just not wanting to cough up the money. They held on for those venerable stadiums for years and years and years after other cities and franchises had gone to the multi-purpose ones.
Right.
And they took the vet and then they held on to that for years and years and years when everybody had gone back to the single-purpose stadiums and gone back and gone retro in all of their designs. But it seems like with the advent of the Jeffrey Lurie administration and I think a much more savvy political climate, they kind of got over that Oakland syndrome.
Yeah, and what's happening, and you've seen this, you referenced it too when we were talking about diners, and boy, I wish there were more diners in the Silicon Valley where I live. They just have private dining rooms. They don't have public diners. And so the challenge is that people don't have that DNA for their community. Yeah. They don't feel it's special. And unless you really put together a strategic plan to stay, the cover of the book that you're showing now, those are the cranes that lift the cargo containers. It's the sixth busiest port in America. And you're going to screw around with that. There's no ease of getting in. It's hard to get out. At one point, the A's were talking about a gondola, I swear. A gondola from downtown Oakland to bring fans across a constantly gridlocked 880. And so we wanted to tell the story of not secrets, but here's what happens that leads to a team leaving a market. And the tragic part of this is if the Oakland A's leave, they're not going to see another pro sports team of the big four anytime soon. Now, there's another group, much more complicated, that is trying to negotiate part of the Coliseum, the existing location,
right,
to bring a WNBA team there. And you know, women's sports are showing incredible growth.
Oh, yeah. But
it's not the World Series. It's not All-Star games. It's not Super Bowls. And I have this in my gut, and Dave Newhouse, who literally, you know, welcomed these teams to the marketplace, welcomed these teams to a facility. Lou, I have a piece of the floor that I think I bought from Ike Richmond when they were selling the floor of the Spectrum. And it's probably, he probably bought it at, you know, at a Home Depot and then it's the Spectrum. But I have it in another room. And you look at that whole area, you know, of South Philly and what it's seen in sports. Yeah. The Coliseum has had the same over 60 years now, but they don't have the organized ability to keep it. And
I was saying before you came on that the California Golden Seals were an expansion team in 1967, along with the Flyers in Pittsburgh and St. Louis. And Ed Snyder and I flew out to see that opening Flyers game, first game they ever played. And they lost 5-1. And we flew back. We were dejected. But I did get one of the thrills of my life prior to that game. Ed Snyder and I had dinner before the game with one of the owners, Charles Schulz, of fame.
Oh, really?
And I have never forgotten that. A most wonderful man. And I'm a big Peanuts fan. I read that all the time. Yes, I still get the newspaper. I get the Inquirer and the Wall Street Journal every day. Then when I go online and I read different other papers. So I'm a newspaper guy. But I never forgot that opening. And that was a beautiful arena.
Yeah. And Charles Schulz, if I remember, he built his own ice rink. He lived north of San Francisco. He built his own ice rink. He let kids play in the ice rink. Occasionally, you'd probably see cartoon strips with the gang skating. And Lou, if you ask the trivia question, name the only NHL team that skated in white skates, you would know the answer, right?
That was the Oakland Seals.
Right. Charlie Finley was the guy that brought the white cleats to the A's.
And the yellow ball with
those great ears. Yeah, and the orange ball. And I only met Finley once or twice, but what I remember about him, a great, great self-promoter.
Yes.
For whatever reason, he couldn't market a ticket if his life depended on it. And that was a tremendous disconnect.
Hey, Andy, before we go, Lou said we have to ask you about a screenplay that you have had in the works for a while about the worst season and It was NBA history, right?
Well, I don't know if it's a screenplay, S-C-R-E-A-M. It's a screenplay, right, Lou? It's not a screenplay. So I have fooled around with this. You've seen a lot of articles. I've sent them to Lou. This is the 50th anniversary on March 25th of 9 and 73.
Yeah.
You see the great Julius Erving, number six behind you. You know, we had the great Freddie Boyd, Mad Dog Carter, Manny Leaks. When does he leak? Dave Zinkoff handing out salamis for people that hit free throws. So my book, screenplay, whatever, is called Hoops Hades, H-A-D-E-S. And my good friend, Rick Welts, and I'm sure Lou knows him and you do too, Doug. He's had a very distinguished career. And I called him up when the Warriors went 73-9 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, what do you think's harder, 73-9 or 9-73? And he goes, yes, you are effed up. And I go, besides that, what's harder? And he just started laughing. And I go, you know what? An NBA team is going to break your record in the next 10 years. But 9-73, people talk about the Charlotte team that lost, you know, that won six games. Well, they only played 66. You want to really suck, you got to play all 82.
you failed to mention one of the great sports heroes of Philadelphia lore, who didn't quite make it to the Hall of Fame, the famous coach of that team.
Poor Roy Rubin. People thought poor was his first name. Poor Roy Rubin from LIU. And guys, we can talk about this for a long time. One of the kindest, gentlest writers in U.S. sports history, Jack Kaiser, right, Lou? Really kind, who would rip the living crap out of anybody at any time, anywhere. And Jack Kaiser, for those that know sports writers in Philly, he just launched, and he knew right away, this guy is way out of his element. And he just started calling him poor Roy Rubin in every story he wrote.
And that was his epitaph. Well, Andy Dolich's new book out very soon, book signings galore, Goodbye Oakland, Winning Wanderlust and a Sports Town's Fight for
Available
Survival.
At bookstores near you. Go to Amazon, go to any place that you think you can get the best deals, and let us know what you think, because it's about what's happened in America over decades of cities losing teams and never thinking it could happen to them.
Yep, exactly. Well, sports exec, franchise fixer, and now author Andy Dolich, as always, thanks for coming on.
And what time is it out there, Andy?
It's 8 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock.
All right, good.
Okay. 8 o'clock. I promise the next time I'll be 5 minutes early instead of 30 seconds early.
We'll hold the check this time, though.
Doug and Lou, thank you. Say hi to the greatest sports fans in the world, Philadelphia.
All right, Andy. Thanks so much, man. Hey, when we always come back, living 75 years of Philly sports and heartbreak with our own Lou Scheinfeld when the Museum of Sports Show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a moment.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's
856-589-6034. 30 seconds.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Perrin Perron,
Stand by, 10 seconds.
Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun. every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheinmel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Susan's off this week. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DePatchy Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Well, normally I would be telling you that up next is our king of sports collectibles, whose family is the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection. It's worth over $35 million, and he's our partner in the Museum of Sports. But Nick is not with us. Nick very suddenly went to Disney World with his family. So Nick is off this week. We'll see him back next week. That's a terrible setup for that. What happened to Nick?
People just tuning in thought that
we'd killed him off.
Yeah. That was the invasion from Mars again.
Yeah. But our king of Philly sports dreams and nightmares, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld, is here to relive his day terrors and night terrors of what it's like 75 years of Philly sports, Lou. And I think, you know, folks can tell just by looking at you what it did.
Well, I got hooked. I got hooked at 12 years old. I was smoking Philly sports, not a Philly cigar, but Philly sports. And yeah. I'll mention the number 11,000. Fans, can you relate 11,000? To 11,000 Phillies losses in 192
years? Is that really
years?
What it is?
11,000. They were the first one ever in North America, organized sports, to lose 10,000 games. Now it's 11,000.
Wow.
And I said at the top of the show that last week, before the Phillies played their first game, I looked at the schedule. I saw they were three games at the Rangers, which has a pretty good team this year, yep. And three games at Yankee Stadium before they came home. I said 1-5. Yeah. And I said 1-5, not wanting 1-5. I wanted 5-1, but this is Philadelphia. This is where your soul gets crushed. And I think Mike Sielski in the Inquirer mentioned that phrase today, soul crushing losses, whether it was 1964 when they blew a 6.5 game lead with 12 games to go. The Phillies, the worst collapse in the history of baseball. People still haven't gotten over it. I haven't. I still have my World Series tickets from 1964. I didn't use them because there were no games. And now we have the Phillies coming off an incredible World Series run, a playoff run, very, very exciting. Citizens Bank Park packed again. The atmosphere, it was electric. It was fantastic. Are they going to do it again? I don't think so. And I say that because I've been here. 12 years old. I'm now 87. So it's 75 years of soul crushing losses. I've got the Phillies at 84 wins this year, 84-78.
That's plausible.
Not as good as last year. And they'll make the playoffs. They're going to be eliminated in the first round by Atlanta. I'm sorry to say Trey Turner will have a very nice year. Aaron Nola is done. He doesn't know it yet, but he's done. Zach Wheeler, who I love, he's a horse. He's on his way out because if you watch him pitch, he reminds me of Roy Halladay when Roy Halladay imploded. You could just see the steam coming off his face. He was sweating. He was forcing every pitch. Bohm, the third baseman. I love this kid. I think he's going to have a good year. Unfortunately, Bryce Harper is coming back from a terrible injury and making great progress. He's only going to hit 260, maybe 15 home runs. He's not only going to get into 60 games, mostly as a DH. So I don't want to paint a bleak picture, but I got to tell you, it's been a bleak picture. Yeah, the Eagles, thank God, have won a Super Bowl and went back last year. I don't see them going back this year. I'm praying. I hope they do. But we have been crushed so much. And Doug, your favorite topic, we once had the world's largest indoor tennis tournament, men's and women's, at the Spectrum. Yep. Nothing like that has ever happened since the Fernberger family that produced that. I tell you, I'm thinking about it now. I didn't even realize the enormity of what we were doing back then when we had that. No tennis tournament since in Philadelphia. Philly does a great tennis. We have 1,000 country clubs. You can't even get on the court. They're so busy.
Yeah, as God is my witness.
Why don't we have tournaments here?
God is my witness. That's going to be the thesis when we get Billie Jean King's go-ahead for one of our Thursdays. Another great tennis guy and mine, Skip Schwartzman, here in town, who was involved with a lot of those other tournaments back in the day. But you know, you've got towns like Cincinnati and Charleston and sort of these second-tier markets, maybe in some cases third-tier markets, that have 250 and 500 level ATP and WTA tournaments, and we can't get one here. And somebody told me, Cincinnati is the Western and Southern, big bank there, bankroll the whole thing. They built a complex for them. That would be the thing to overcome here. Larry Needles will have on from Philly, PHL Sports. That was one of the things he had brought up was, you've got to get a facility built and one that's, you know, not just using a venue at Villanova and one at Penn and one at Temple. It's got.
We have a complex in Philadelphia. It's called Inferiority.
Yes,
we have an Inferiority complex. It's huge. It's a multi-billion-dollar set up here. But I'm sorry about the gloom and doom. But I have to say that Schwarber and Castellano are going to set a world record of 600 strikeouts this summer. Look forward to it.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. We want to thank our guests, play-by-play royalty, Mr. Merrill Reese, and sports exec and author Andy Dolich. Our King of Sports Collectibles, Nick DePaccia Jr., will be back next week from Disney World. And don't forget to buy Lou's recent book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Portion of the proceeds goes to the museum. You can get a custom autographed copy by going to themuseumofsports.org. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld, Susan Baxter, and Nick DePaccia Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, wishing you a happy Passover and a happy Easter, and reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Louis.
These are the good old days.
Have a wonderful holiday weekend, everybody. Take care. Good show.